Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Following On County Cricketer. I'm John Norman from TalkSport alongside the Cricketer magazine's Nick Friend and the returning George DeBell and two-time County Championship winner Steve Harmison. Looking back at all the action from the County Championship and ahead to next week's fair. Plenty as ever to get our teeth stuck into. We're also going to be answering some of your questions as part of the show. And looking at the players that have been performing and some of those that haven't in Race to Lords. We've got lots to discuss, including Ben Stokes' return to county cricket and Joe Root and a little bit of KP as well. So thanks for joining us, whether it's on YouTube podcast or on TalkSport 2's radio show. You're watching or listening to Following On County Cricket. OK, guys, well, welcome back to George DeBell. Happy birthday to you as well. Hope you had a lovely week away in Italy. Well, since you've been gone, well, we haven't had a test men's captain announced. We haven't had Rob Key speaking, but we have had plenty of action on the field. First up, Ben Stokes, 17 sixes in his return to county cricket. Just a reminder that England do have a fair bit of talent alongside the returning Joe Root as well. So a good week of cricket. I'll start with you though, Harmy. We could talk a bit about Ben Stokes, but off the back of that, KP got involved, retweeting some footage of just one or two of Ben Stokes' 17 sixes. And not for the first time, slamming county cricket and suggesting that the standard isn't quite up to scratch.
Yeah, I've never changed my opinion of Kevin. I think when he speaks with the game trying to move forward, I just don't think he's, as usual, thought about what the ramifications are for when he opens his mouth. And that are largely down to 18 first-class counties. Yes, you can argue that the bowling was friendly towards Ben Stokes. You can argue that whatever challenges we have in the game of cricket, the one thing I will say about Kevin Peterson, I'm not sure he'd be the superstar he would if the system had been changed, because 18 first-class counties gives you a lot of cricketers a chance to meet late developers, to potentially have a cricket of employment in their mid-20s. I think that's what Kevin did when he came over from Peter Maritzburg a few years ago. So I think he's got to be careful. I understand what he's saying. Want to make county cricket better, that's no question whatsoever. But I think there's ways and means of doing it. And unfortunately, Kevin's franchise system, I don't think would work.
What about you, George? Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you. Nice to be back. I admire Kevin for having the courage to rock the boat. I think English cricket needs to have its boat rocked. And I think it'd be really helpful to have the franchise debate. Now, as it happens, I don't agree with his conclusions at this stage. But, it's through debate that we learn. And maybe he's got good ideas in there somewhere. So I've got no problem with him banging that drum and that being his agenda. I think it comes from a good place. I think he means well. What I do have a bit of a problem with is him using an 18-year-old as an example of everything that's wrong with county cricket. I thought that was unfair and I thought it was unkind. I thought that actually that over was okay. What I've seen in when the times that bowlers have been murdered in that way, Stuart Broad, Ben Stokes, Malcolm Nash, is that they tend to stick to the same thing, haven't they? And it seemed that Baker was trying to bowl his stock ball again and again, and you could argue that was quite brave, you know, that he was trying to get him caught. Now, maybe a wiser, older cricketer would have fired one in wide of the stumps either side. Maybe they would. Maybe he should have done. But he's 18, and there are quite a lot of good things about that. I didn't see any long hops or full tosses in that spell. So I thought it was really harsh. And the other irony, as Harmy points out, is that in a franchise system, good luck picking an 18-year-old spinner who actually could go on and have a really, really good career. He could be the new Daniel Vittori. I don't want to put too much pressure on him, but he is that sort of bowler. It's good luck trying to pick someone like that. Equally, good luck getting Ben Stokes to play while the IPL's going on. So a lot of bowlers have had bad days, a lot of batters too, and it's part of the formative learning stages of their career. And I thought it was really harsh to pick on an 18-year-old and use him as an example of a system that's broken. There are problems with the system. I really genuinely commend Kevin for caring enough to stick his head above the parapet, because he knows it's going to get kicked. And I think we should have the debate about franchises. I really do. I think we should have the debate. I'd like to air it, and to be honest, I'd like to refute it. But the way he did it, I don't know, it was really clumsy and unfair on a young bowler who you know, to say that he's a symbol of decline is desperately unfair.
What about you, Nick? Franchise cricket, does that keep you awake at night?
I agree with everything that George said, to be honest. I was mainly going to talk about Baker rather than Stokes or rather than anything else. You know, he was in the England under-19 squad that were, you know, a game away from being under-19 world champions a few months ago. And when that was going on, everyone was tweeting about it, watching these kids go and batter sides that, you know, maybe in the past they might not have beaten, and people talking about how that meant the future of Brighton. Suddenly you bowl one over that gets taken down by a bloke who's among the best players that England have ever produced on a pitch that was good enough to produce 500s well into its fourth day. I mean, you know, social media can clip up anything, can't it? You know, we've had Rory Burns bowling, Mohammad Rizwan bowling. That doesn't mean the championship's declining. It means that the pitches are good enough that teams have seen that the game's done. They don't want to flog their bowlers into the dirt. Like, you can, I think Kevin had a go at that earlier on in the competition when Rory Burns was bowling. And I say, you know, does that happen in an ideal world? No. But this time last year, we were having the complete opposite chat, weren't we? That there weren't enough runs and, you know, bowlers were having too much success. And suddenly now the bowler's getting carted around on a flat one and we're being told that the bowlers can't bowl. So, you know, and as George says, an 18-year-old kid, who for what it's worth, is everything he'd want in a young left-arm spinner. He's tall, he bowls at a good pace, he bats. He's done it he's done it at Worcester where it's not that easy to bowl. There have been a lot of runs in the last couple of years. It's certainly not that easy to bowl spin. I mean, I think until he came in last year, Worcester didn't really have a red ball spinner. Brett De La Vere was doing the job. Moeen Ali was at the IPL. He came in, gave it a very good go. He only turns 19 next week. There is a lot going for him. And frankly, you know, I think he'll be a guy that I'll be watching a lot more than others in the next couple of weeks, because if he can come and take 2-fors, 3-fors, 4-fors on the back of this, and actually you've probably taught a lot more about him than what you are in the space of 6 balls that have been clipped up for social by a guy with a massive following. So, you know, Graham Napier hit 16 sixes for Essex against Surrey, 2011 I think it was. Yasser Arafat, Chris Tremblett, Gareth Batty, Stuart Meeker, Zana De Bruyne, not club bowlers. It happens. You play on a flat one, you get a guy who's seeing like a beach ball. In that case, Graham Napier. In this case, one of the best players that England have seen. Not everything has to be as black and white as, look what's wrong with the game, look at, you know, the game's dead. Like, just applaud the batting and say that it's a kid on a flat one and move on.
Well, I think you have to also remind Kevin of what the County Championship is about, and wonder about the, as Harmy suggested, whether he's thought it through. Because if you are asking for outside investment, you were asking to start judging this purely as a financial business, in the same way that you might IPL teams in the long run. I think that's really unwise. I think that shows a bit of a misunderstanding. You cannot judge these things purely by what money they bring in. They are about building. They are about investment. And I thought it was an interesting time to make the comment. You know, at the moment we're seeing water companies make profits while they flush our rivers with sewage, while you're seeing energy companies put prices up and pay huge dividends to their shareholders and bonus executives. That seems to be the way that cricket is going. I think it's a bad way. I think it's we've got something quite special with basically this mutual organisation with the counties owned by their members. And just something I always think is worth remembering. In that COVID summer of 2020, the two counties that were least keen to play championship cricket that summer were the ones that were not county owned. They were the ones that were privately owned. I think that's really, really revealing. So as soon as you have franchise investment, they are going to want to return. They're going to want to return. And I'd be really interested to see a list of all the players that have come through that have been developed by franchise tournaments. They will be basically parasites. I think it's... I understand what Kevin's concerns. And I'll say that I think they come from a good place and he's a good man. But I think it's a simplistic solution. And he hasn't really thought it through. And the example was really, really clumsy.
Anything else, guys, before we move on?
No, I just think the Marvel and, you know, we talk about Ben Stokes and what he did. If that was the example he wanted to make, it just shows that, you know, the gulf of players that are playing international cricket and what fantastic talent we've got. But what I will say about the county so far, it's been knocked over the winter. You've got to start somewhere. And I think we're starting at a good place now. We are producing flat pitches and runs. If you do that, bowlers will get better. And all of a sudden, the bowlers will catch up. And then it's up to batters to then adapt to it later on in the season. What we're seeing now is, you know, the leading wicket takers in this country are good bowlers. Potts has got a bit of pace. Hassan Ali, international bowler. Mohammed Abbas, international bowler. Bowlers with a bit of pace. Patterson, from Dave Patterson from South Africa, bit of pace. That's what we want to see. If the batters can score runs on good pitches, the top bowlers, the quick bowlers, what we need to produce will get better. And I think we've got to start somewhere. And I actually think if we're starting on pitches like we are now, English cricket will get better.
That's dead right. That's exactly right, because it's going to force counties to pick bowlers with either extreme pace, excellent skills, or spinners with a bit of bite. And we've just started. We're 100 metres into a 30-mile journey. It's going to take a long time. English cricket is in a low ebb, but to abandon everything that's built it up for years, and as you say, abandon all the principles that helped Kevin be one of the best players English cricket's ever had, because he sure as hell wasn't a good batter when he came to England. And England became the number one team in the world, winner T20 World Cup, of which he was an absolutely integral part. You know, let's remember the things that built that, and actually it was playing four-day championship cricket on good pitches through the middle of the season with the best players. And if you have a franchise tournament, you'll have the players. It'll be the same people who own the IPL teams. You're not going to see Ben Stokes in the county championship. And by the way, exactly what happened to Baker happened to Ben Stokes. We all saw it happen. These things happen to good players, have bad days. And I thought it was really nice that Ben Stokes reached out to him, although I'd have been surprised if he hadn't. And, you know, we don't know exactly what he said, but basically said these things happen, you'll learn from it. Really good. And yeah, we should probably be focusing on the marvel that is Ben Stokes rather than an 18-year-old who had a trying day. And I'll say again, I don't think he wilted under pressure. I thought he did okay. You can't just judge on results.
Well, let's concentrate. Let's marvel on some of the runs and some of the wickets with the top line.
The top line.
Okay, top line then, guys. Has anybody got a top line that doesn't involve Ben Stokes?
Dom Sibley. Well, there's not anyone out there who doesn't think Ben Stokes is a really terrific international cricketer, is there? You know, that's hardly breaking news. And while it was quite exceptional, it's not like he hasn't done something very similar before. Did he not hit Liam Dawson for 5 sixes in a row very early in his career? Right.
It was his first championship game I was playing. He got 99, I think he got, in his first championship game at the Aegeus Bowl, and I don't know, I want to ask Ben this, because if I remember this right, I actually think he didn't try and hit the last ball for six. He hit it for four. He didn't try and run down a wicket and belt it for six, if I can remember. Something in my mind is telling me that, but again, it was, and these weren't sixes. The 5 sixes at the Aegeus Bowl weren't sixes, they were eights. They were massive. They were going out the ground, they were huge. So he has done it before.
Okay, so yeah, you know, it's hardly breaking news, exceptional though it is. And he has done it to, you know, Pat Cummins and all sorts of other people. So, you know. But Dom Sibley is rebuilding his game. And I think I've said in previous weeks, he looks good. But now he's got the score to show for it. I thought it was very interesting. I can't remember word for word what he said. But Bumble has been quite a vocal critic of Dom Sibley over the last couple of years. And he was full of praise for him. And basically his technique looks more orthodox. He's opened up the offside. He is still solid. He is still patient. He carried his bat through an innings where every other Warwickshire batter struggled. He got, I think, what did he get? 182 in the game for once out. I think they'll be very reluctant, England, to pick an opening pair of Lees and Sibley and then push Crawley to three. I just think that might, they might feel that that is a bit defensive. But he is pushing himself back into the reckoning. It might come a bit, not come soon enough for this first test squad, which I think is announced in a week. But it's coming, and that's got to be good news for English cricket.
On the defensiveness, I wonder, I don't know, certain, it's just a, I'm just thinking aloud, really, that, I mean, I've said, I think we've all said before on here that, and a lot of guys have said, that when you come back for your second go, if you come back for your second go, there are a lot of things you do differently, and you would know to do differently. And I do wonder, given the freedom he's played with in domestic stuff since he's come back into that, and the way he's changed his game, whether actually he would get the same defensive player, as it were, if he got another go in international cricket, or whether, you know, maybe some of this time has been spent thinking about sort of the nuances of, you know, a middle ground, I guess, and actually whether you didn't just see someone who was as solid as before, but as I guess as you've said about the changes he's made to his game, whether we found someone who had a lot more options in his game, and if he did go well second time round, you might look back at that first inning and said, actually, you know, he started with a pretty good base, you know, was hard to get out, didn't necessarily go anywhere fast, but came back in a year or 2 years later with a far more rounded game. And I guess that is an advert for a lot of guys, isn't it? I mean, I wanted to touch on Sam Robson later, but I guess he sort of fits into the same discussion as this, isn't it? He got 149 in a brilliant Middlesex win that I'm sure we will touch on later, but Robson is the perfect example, isn't he? Where 8 years down the line from his seven tests, where he averaged 30, people at the time said it was a friendly attack and that 30 wasn't very much, but actually now if you average 30 in your first seven tests in England batter, you'd be framed, wouldn't you? Like you'd be taught as captaincy material if you did that through the next seven tests. I mean, that's not necessarily being churlish, but it's just, I think we've realised since Strauss and perhaps through 3, 4, 5, 23 or whatever it is now, openers that have had a go since then, that it's not easy to come in and average 40 straight away. So whether a Robson is, you know, I think Robson should be well in the frame. He's the right age profile, I think, for someone who understands their game, who's had a lot of time in the domestic game, who's scored a lot of runs at Lords, where it's not easy to bat, who goes away and plays great cricket in Australia, which is what England have been looking for. And he's scoring big match-winning runs, albeit in Division 2, but against, Ollie Robinson in a pretty strong Division 2 at the moment as well. So I'd chuck his name onto that same pile as George's, put Sibley there. I think both would be very solid options if England went with him this summer.
Harmy, I've just checked out that Ben Stokes innings, by the way. Not only he did get a century, you're right, he took a single from the final ball of the over against Liam Dawson, Ben Stokes. He ended up with 136 not out. You were injured, so you couldn't bowl, but you were in the side. And he also took three wickets in an over.
I remember that. I broke my wrist. Philip Mustard hit me on the arm at the non-striker's end, smashed it back at me while I was taking a mickey out of Dominic Cork because he was belting him everywhere. Refused a single, and the next ball, Mother Cricket, did me, didn't it? He whacked it straight back at me and broke my wrist. But just on Sibley and on Robson, coming back into the test side, there's one thing you need to happen. You need to put right what was going wrong before. And I seen two shots of Dom Sibley the other day. He hit an extra cover drive, and I thought, wow, that's a good shot. Something you didn't have before. And he played back foot. He played a back foot punch, which I think he had played before. But he looked in total control, a lot of balance, and he looked as though it wasn't a force to hit that extra cover where it was before, which got a man a hell of a lot of trouble outside half stump to get nicked off. So what you want is you want somebody to come back in the side who has actually put a few things right that were constantly getting him into trouble. And it looks like he's well on the way. Whether Sam Robson's done the same, you know, time will tell. But I think on coming into that, I think that's what you want. If a young batsman goes out the side, you want him to be better when he comes back in, not physically, not mentally, but technically, because he's been left out because of technical reasons. No question whatsoever on his temperament, Sibley. None whatsoever. I think that kid was made temperamentally for test cricket opening the batting because he bat for long periods, excellent concentration. It was just the one thing he just kept getting out in the same way, and international bowlers will knock you over if you've got a weakness like that. If he's done that better, then he's fine. My top line, I know Nick's mentioned the Middlesex game, but my top line is Tom Hinds' declaration, 370, to try and win a game, risk losing it to try and win it. If you do that as a captain, more often than not, you'll win matches. And for me, I thought that was quite refreshing from a young captain to do what he did. Give Middlesex a chance, but also risk, you know, he's risk lost again, but he tried to win it. And if we've got captains like that, I think we'll get a lot of good cricketers out of first-class cricket with mentalities like that.
It was a really, really interesting declaration, wasn't it? Because there was a lot of different things going on in the game. I think they left it too late for a second new ball. They had to bowl a lot of spin to get their over eight numbers back up to avoid a penalty. But then Middlesex were missing Robbie White, who dislocated his shoulder. But Middlesex had also scored 700 at Hove last year. But equally, from Middlesex's perspective, they'd lost a few games last year defending 350. So it was one of those... It was a really interesting one, because there was all sorts of nuance knocking around. Ollie Robinson obviously back as well, but I think they were quite wary of flogging him into the ground. George Garton's first game after a pretty long bout of long COVIDs. So there was all kinds of stuff that I imagine were going through Sussex minds when they made that call. So as you say, good on them for... Ultimately, they came nowhere close. But yeah, I think both teams would say that anything could have happened in that fourth innings, given all the sort of narratives around where that game was at. I think Shaheen had been ill that morning as well. So perhaps Sussex looked at it and thought they needed 8 wickets rather than 10. As you say, you'll be on the right end of them eventually.
OK, so I think you successfully argued the case of Dom Sibley there, George. So that's the top line. Not Stokes, not Middlesex, but we could talk about Middlesex a bit more in top three moments of the week.
Moments of the week.
OK, moments of the week. We've already mentioned a couple of them. Joe Root coming back to cricket. Ben Stokes doing what Ben Stokes does. We spoke about Dom Sibley, Haynes and the declaration. Let's talk about Middlesex, actually, because, you know, top of the table, Division 2, they've got off to a really good start. They seem to have the bowling and, they showed they've got the batting as well with that second innings. I think Middlesex have really impressed me the start of the season. I won't mention Surrey, but, you know, they turned out another win again. Glamorgan again, the boys from the Valleys, George, you must be delighted to see them second in the table. Durham with a little bit to do, though, Harmy.
Yeah, Durham just can't win a game. They can draw plenty. Well, an interesting one for mine was the Hampshire one, when I think James Vince gave himself 2 night watchmen, and then Donald and Fuller put 100 on for the last wicket to give them a chance of, well, they chased 360. They left Gloucester somewhere like 360. So 100 for the last wicket and winning the game by 87 runs is... Yeah, that was good from Hampshire's lower order. Yeah, but Durham do have a bit of work to do. They can score as many runs as they want, but if you can't take 20 wickets, you ain't winning cricket matches.
What else, George or Nick? Where were you, Nick? I saw you at the Oval on Friday.
I did a day at the Oval, and I was just taken up with other things. But on Harmy's point with Donald, it's certainly worth a shout out just for the simple fact that was his first game since 2019, I think. He's been desperately battered by injuries, really, isn't he? I think it was the ACL. But he's missed 2 years of cricket. That was his first competitive game since September 2019. So fair play for making it count, I guess, more than anything. But yeah, I was following Middlesex. I was at the Oval. Surrey looked very good. I mean, I know you don't want to talk about them, John, no. But if we do it on your behalf, maybe that's fairer. They just look very good. They've got 10 batters and about 10 bowlers. Ryan Patel's an all-rounder at the top of the order, and then you've got Jamie Overton, who's an older all-rounder at number 10. John Clark got the highest ever Surrey score by number 9 last week, and when he didn't get any this week, Overton and Gus Atkinson got 60 each. And I guess similarly to that Hampshire game, where they sort of went for a pretty middling total that would have put Northants in the game to 400 on, and I think John Sadler admitted afterwards that it sort of basically killed their spirit, going from winning the toss bowling, having them 260 odd for 8, and then suddenly being miles behind the game within a session. But the wickets come from anywhere. Sam Curran didn't bowl at all in the game, but got his runs. Don't think Ryan Patel bowled in the game, but they got Colin de Grandhomme in as a replacement for Kemar Roach, who's almost ideal on the pitch that they played on, actually. And obviously also bats. They just look extremely well set. They've not picked Verdi or Moriarty, but they've got Will Jackson off spin at number 4 and number 5. Ollie Pope was missing, Jamie Smith was missing. They've just got every single base covered. Cam Steele's not played yet. He bowls leg spin and bats. Folks didn't keep, I don't think. Well, Folks didn't play last week, so they got Ollie Pope to keep because Jamie Smith got a double hundred. But Folks was back for this one. There's just options coming out their ears at the moment. And fair play, they've rectified what they didn't do last year as well, which is they kept on drawing at the Oval on, you know, big flat high scoring pitches. They've actually had their 2 big draws away from the Oval, and they've won their 3 games at home. So hard to stop, I think, based on the early evidence, but I guess they'll lose players to England at some point, and then, you know, then they'll go again.
Also, they've lost the toss, I think, four times out of five as well. Matt Parkinson, George, or Harmy, weighed in with some more wickets. I think he took six wickets, didn't he?
Doing everything right, isn't he? Doing everything right. And as Nick said, increasingly are answering my doubts, I suppose, which about whether he can do the holding role as well, because whether you like it or not, you've got to. And he's doing both, so he might well be in pole position. They're picking the squad soon, yeah? They're picking the squad after one more round of games. He's probably in, isn't he?
Well, he seems like the kind of player Stokes... He would fit the Stokes mould from the outside looking in, wouldn't he, Harmy?
If you're picking Broad and Anderson, you have to pick Parkinson. And the problem is, who bats at number eight? And that's your other conundrum on bowler. If you pick Broad and Anderson, you're picking bowlers that aren't going to blow teams away. You're going to contain very, very well and do what they do well. You're going to need something different as a captain, and that would be the leg spinner. To blow a tail away, to knock over somebody that's, you know, that gets set on a good pitch. And I think he's done that quite well, Parkinson. But then you've got to find somebody that can play that sort of second all-rounder role at number eight. And then you're looking at the likes of Wokes, Overton, Robinson. And then you go back to the conundrum. Well, can we really play them and Anderson and Broad on the same side? But if you've got a leg spinner, it changes the dynamics a little bit. And I think, because of that, I think Matt Parkinson's a shoo-in for the first test match.
It might be relevant that I don't think Wokes can play, because he's not played this week in the championship game against North Hants. And that would mean they'd have to pick him for the squad before he's played a championship game this season. I just don't see that as... He might be there, but I don't see him as being a realistic option for the test team anymore. So that's... I don't know how much Stokes... I mean, I genuinely don't know how much Stokes rates Parkinson, but I can tell you, in the nets, I have at times feared for Parkinson's well-being, because Stokes murders him in a way that... I mean, I've seen him hit the ball back at him several times. I've seen him take blows on the arms and in the body. I've honestly feared for him. It didn't look as if he rated him particularly, but he does have that ability, doesn't he, as a batter, to make it look like all bowlers are, you know, insufficient. So I think it would be really interesting. But you can't say he can have done any more. And if we are serious about change and getting different results, probably got to do a few things differently. So he probably has done enough already, hasn't he?
It's unfortunate for Wokes, that, isn't it? Going into the winter, not many people would have said that Chris Wokes should be England's linchpin in Australia and the Caribbean, would they? And if he'd not been, we'd probably come into the summer saying we've got a very, very good English conditioned bowler in Chris Wokes. It'd be a bit of a shame if his international career was sort of drawn a line under on the back of not performing in conditions where historically he's not really mastered it, but then didn't get another go in England where we know he's as good as anything that England have had in recent times.
Yeah, he's got a better record in home test than Anderson abroad, which is incredible. It obviously adds that batty. Look, Robinson's done enough to come back into the side, I think. I mean, you might want to see him play one more game to make sure that he can come through it. But the worry with Robinson is he did bat eight, didn't he, for Sussex. He's looked a number 11 for England, hasn't he, since his first or second test innings. It would be lovely if he could develop his batting. I believe he could develop his batting, but he doesn't look like an eight at the moment. And that has a knock-on effect to who else you pick, as Harmy suggests. I'm not sure Broad gets back in, by the way. I mean, he's played one game so far and looked all right. But, you know, if you're picking on anything like form, I don't know. Do you want Broad and Anderson? We've got to stop talking about them as the same person, haven't we? They're different people. With different skills now as well. So I don't know that Broad's a shoo-in. I know that there's been a lot of talk about they're our best bowlers and all the rest of it, but you know, he's had quite a long layoff. Look, Broad may well come back into the side, but I'd be surprised if he played five more tests. We're at that stage of the career, aren't we?
I'd play them both in the first test match. I think you've got to start trying to win games and then worry about the future in the future. I think and that's the same as the top of the order. Pick our best players that we feel as though we can win this week, worry about next week. And Broad and Anderson, in my opinion, their experience, their control, that's the thing that we didn't have in the winter. We had no control whatsoever from either end. You start somewhere, build small blocks and start going again. We got a leg spinner, which I think we possibly have to play. That decision might then have a ramification for somebhere like Folkestone, from a wicket-keeping point of view. Stokes goes to six, Root's gone to four. best only fits in one place, and that's Bandy Stumps.
We have to come back to England, having not kept for ages, and go into a test match. I don't think he gets a Champo game, does he? And even if he did, you know, it would be one, and there was a time when we wouldn't have thought that was enough. Look, I think they'll go for Overton, partly because of the point you make, Harmy, that I would be worried about a tale of, what is that, Robinson, Broad, Anderson, Parkinson.
Parkinson.
It's a worry, isn't it? Parkinson. I don't even know who goes at eight. I guess Robinson. So I think that Overton will play. I think it'll be more likely to be Overton, Anderson, Robinson, Parkinson. But, you know, it's very, very difficult to predict anything when you actually don't know who's selected the side yet.
You got to know who's selecting the side, or who's selecting the side, or who's coaching the side.
We don't know who selected it, and we don't know that they're going to make competent decisions. Let's remember that Gary Kirsten is the man who, when appointed as a Welsh Fire coach, wrote very much looking forward to insert name here, you know, as a tweet. Does he know? Is he watching these scores? Has he seen enough of these players? Or is he going to be very reliant on Rob Key and Ben Stokes? So you would think whoever took over is going to be hugely reliant on them right now. So
who's picking the side? Is James Taylor picking the side?
He'll be involved, yeah.
Guys, shall we move on to Race to Lords? We kind of broached into that subject anyway. Let's have a look at the runners and the riders.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Race to Lords.
Okay, so this time last week, I was threatening to drop Rory Burns, Sam Robson and Dom Sibley from Race to Lords if they didn't get a score. And Rory Burns hit 107. Sam Robson hit a match-winning 149 in second innings. And Dom Sibley hit 142 not out. So they're back in. We've had a couple of new entries as well. Joe Root hit 75 against Essex. And a little-known New Zealand-born all-rounder called Ben Stokes hit 161 from 88 balls, 8 fours, 17 sixes, but struggled with the ball. 0 for 38 and 0 for 47. Surrey's Ollie Pope didn't play. Ben Folkes did. He hit 16 against Northants. Sam Curran has gone past 5,000 first-class runs, yet to score a century. He hit 73. Alex Leese, 60 not out and 27 against Worcestershire. I'm sorry, Nick. We're ejecting two players. One of them's James Bracey. He hit another duck and two against Hampshire. So he will not feature now. And I'm also thinking of dropping Adam Live because he has not had a great start to the season. I don't think anybody's really considering him for a place in England's top two now. So he hit 10 against Essex. So he's gone. My man, Darwin Milan. Another 50, I noticed. Did you see, by the way, Harmy? I argued strongly that Joe Root should return to four, and it looks like he will be returning to four. That does leave number three open, where Milan, of course, did quite well at the start of the Ashes. Harry Brook, we mentioned him last week. He is a new entry. He hit 123.
He has to play at Lords. He has to play at Lords, and that meant that number five spot. He's got to play at Lords at number five spot.
So who bets it?
You know, I can't disagree. I mean, I think he's. I think that's a really bold call, but I can't disagree with it.
Yeah,
I don't think he's the only option. I mean, you're basically saying he's playing ahead of Pope.
Pope was ill last week as well. I mean, I'd assume he's recovered.
I think Pope's okay.
Well, I think the one thing I'd say on Brook, and this isn't. I think I agree with Harmy. I would just say it to be mildly cautionary, which that if he doesn't have a great series against New Zealand, it doesn't make him awful. It makes him a 23-year-old who's had a very good start to the season, averages 33 in first-class cricket, and is hitting all the right notes, and has been well spoken of for a very long time, and sure will be, you know, we will hope will be the player we're going to be looking for. But that doesn't, if he doesn't start well in 2-3 tests, as we've said before with other young lads, whether it's Bracey or Lawrence or Crane or anyone else we've spoken about in the last few weeks, it doesn't make him a bad cricketer or a bad player. It doesn't make the championship a bad product. It doesn't mean he's scoring the wrong runs in the wrong position. Like it may well just mean that he's a 23-year-old coming up against very good bowlers. But we hope he averages 50 in his first series and never leaves that spot. But I think it is worth saying, because otherwise we throw that into for a test debut on the back of the big runs, and we.
If the thing is though, if Brook plays at 5, that means Bairstow plays at 7, doesn't it?
That would be my solution. I think the conversation with Milan would be an interesting one, whether Milan gets another go at 3, scoring a lot of runs, experience. Bear in mind, we're working on the theory that we're trying to win the next game with our best side. At this minute in time, probably Milan is probably our calmest option to go in at number 3. And if you look at that, then Brook has to play, because the amount of runs that Brook has scored this year, batting with David Milan, in a comfortable environment of county cricket on good pitch, then if you're bringing a debutant in, you've got to try and make him as comfortable as he possibly can from your point of view to then go against the opposition. And I think that dynamic would potentially work. Brook, for me, over Pope, I think Ollie Pope is a fantastic cricketer. I really do. I think he's one of the best young cricketers we have produced in a long time. But his consistency, not only with bat, but with being on the field in the recent past, has to put Harry Brook in front. Has to put Brook in front of him, because he's played one, missed one, played one, missed one. Where Brook's played 4 championship games, he's got 635 runs, an average of 150. You pick people on form, and if you've got heads or tails, I think for me, you go with a young man from Yorkshire.
I think if you're picking, I think the form thing's important, isn't it? Especially when you're playing test matches in the middle of the English summer. If you're going to bring a youngster in, pick him when, you know, you've got to give him the best chance. I mean, the best chance is when they're in the form of their life. If there is a time to pick Harry Brook as a 23-year-old, it is now, isn't it? I think that was almost the best argument for it. Not the potential he's shown for a few years. It's the fact that if you're not going to pick him now, he's never going to come into an England team in a better spot than he currently is he? And then you can, I guess it gives you a better chance of making an early judgment. Although, even though I said I don't think we should be making early judgments, he will certainly be in a better spot to succeed than if he comes in on the back of averaging 35 or something.
So what do you do with Pope then? He just doesn't play at this stage.
He bides his time. He waits. He bides his time. He scores runs. He does what every other young English batsman should be doing, especially on these surfaces. Just score some roll runs.
He's not started badly
for any stretch of the imagination, but he's played one, missed one. There's a fitness element there.
He's 320 runs at 65, isn't it?
But I'm looking at a young player who is in the form of his life. I've got to pick one of them.
Bahanan's an option there as well, aren't there? I mean, there are a few options.
You've got to throw him in as an option at number 3 if you don't go with someone like experience of Milan.
I think they might be a bit reluctant to go root Bairstow Stokes. That's 4-5-6. It just, I don't know, it doesn't feel like progress. But, you know, we shall see. You know, as you say, the other option is to give Bairstow the gloves back.
James Vince, is he out? 78 and 15 is another little bit of security, maybe coming in at number 3.
I think the truth at the moment is that we've had such an exceptional start to the summer that we're in a position where you can justifiably say that Ollie Pope is averaging 64, 65, you know, hasn't done enough to get in at number 5. I mean, we've not even mentioned Sean Dixon, who's, I'm not saying Sean Dixon's in England running, but you know, in most years, if you had a lad who'd scored 400s in 4 games or whatever it's been, and was the leading run scorer in the championship, and you know, we've got 40 minutes in, Ben Compton's not come up, and in a normal summer, I'm not saying they'd be in the England running, but it's mad. It's just extraordinary how many runs there have been, isn't it, this first month of the season. But it is quite nice to be in a position, I think, where if there is, where it doesn't necessarily feel black and white. So if they did go Milan, you know, you couldn't say that that was unjustified. If they went Bohannon, you couldn't say that was unjustified. If they left Pope out, you could easily say, well, Harry Brooks had the summer of his life, and vice versa. You could say if Ollie Pope starts, he's probably, you know, he's a very good player and he's had a very good start as well. So it is, I guess, quite a nice spot to be in. Obviously, the proof will be in what happens in June. But yeah, I just think that is, on a wider level, quite a nice place given where we've been recently.
So you know this thing about you've got to pick the side that you think's best, and there's no doubt some sense in that. I just think worry that you have an England side there that could look like this. Milan, Root, Bairstow, Stokes, Anderson, Broad. I don't know. It's always a balance between building for the future and picking the best side. It's always a balance. I mean, it's not black and white. So I would be reluctant not to give some of these guys a go. And whether it's Bohannon or Bruce Pope, I think they're all decent players. But if you pick them, you've got to give them a decent chance. Can't be a couple of games.
The problem you've got now is England are one win from 18 Test matches. If them five, six senior players are going to get England into three wins from five Test matches this summer, going into South Africa, I wouldn't have a problem with that, because you can integrate youngsters into a winning side. What we've seen recently is integrating youngsters into a shambolic side who keep getting beat every time. Then you're not going there, you're just going round and round in circles. So start winning. You're really right. A younger player in here, and you've got a chance.
But aren't these the guys who have been beaten a lot?
Yeah, that's what I mean. But we're in English conditions, and we've always said we are better in English conditions. And sure, the guys that are in, these guys are actually in a little bit of form. They've been belted for, you know, runs and wickets they've got runs and wickets under their belt going into what is going to be a tough three Test matches against New Zealand. But we've got to start winning. We've got to start winning somehow. And if we keep chucking player after player in and we're going round the vicious circle, then we'll be still having this conversation in a year's time after going to Pakistan and New Zealand in the winter and being belted by them.
We've been having this conversation for about 2 years. I suppose it shows the importance of getting a head coach and a selector in place. Right, let's head to... Oh, by the way, Saqib Mahmood, Jack Leach, Craig Overton, Jimmy Anderson did not play, nor did Stuart Broad. Let's get to the mailbag.
The mailbag.
OK, this is a section of the show where we answer your questions. We've just got a couple this week because we've got to... we're always fighting time. Can I just say, though, if you want to get 20% off a 12-edition subscription of The Cricketer magazine, go to thecricketer.com/talksport. And, you'll get your 20% off. OK, this one's for you, Harmy. And it's from Simon Martindale on Twitter. He says, who is a fit, English, genuine pace bowler on the county circuit?
The problem is fit. we can throw 10 names, but they're never fit. Potts is probably the one that's standing out at this minute in time, up at Durham. Carse will be fit relatively soon. I would imagine Stone and Archer are going to play in the T20 Blast, which starts at the end of May. But fit-wise, that's why we're going back to Broad and Anderson. That's why we're looking at Ollie Robinson, Craig Overton. These guys are the ones that are putting their hand up and taking the wickets. At this minute in time, the fit, fast bowler, if you don't look at someone like Matt Potts, who potentially could make the 13 or 14-man squad just to give him some experience, but probably won't play. Outside that, everybody else is injured, and we need to get... But the thing is, with these wickets, we'll start producing quicker bowlers because teams will have to go for something different to try and make something happen. Might not happen this year, but if we consistently play on good surfaces where runs are on the board in the next 1, 2, 3 years with winter investment, we'll get some quick bowlers from somewhere.
Excellent stuff. Daniel King says, where is Dom Sibley in the current pecking order of England Test openers? I think we've answered that one. So I'll throw this one to you, Nick, from Jez, who says, who are the young or inexperienced bowlers impressing you so far?
Bowlers? I forgot they existed last month. Matty Potts, I mean, as Harmy says, has been great, hasn't he? And seems to have come on a lot in Red Bull cricket in the last, well, yeah, I want to say a year or so. I remember being down at Chelmsford last year, and I don't think he played. I think it was Salisbury, Rushworth, Rain, Cars in that side. So he's obviously come a long way, played a big part in that white ball. And so had a very good white ball summer. I know he's not young, but Tom Helm has really impressed me when I've and he is weirdly an experienced rebel as a rebel cricketer. He's just not played very much of it, and he had a side problem last week, so didn't play down at Sussex, but he has really impressed me every time I've seen him bowl this this season so far. And he's quick enough, he's tall, he's worked a lot on the lengths he's been bowling over the winter. I think he's doubled his number of career LBWs in first class cricket in the first month of the season, which probably tells all you need to know about how fully he was bowling before, but how fully he's bowling now and the work he's done. Jamie Overton, who I didn't mention, I guess is, I don't know if he's young, I mean he's the same age as Craig obviously, but he's quick. He was clocked at 90 when the speed gun was at the Oval a couple of weeks ago. He's having a very good season. Jordan Clark at Surrey has been brilliant. He's sort of the unsung guy, and one of the unsung guys in what's obviously a very like international heavy, big name heavy side. He's been excellent. I think he's certainly their leading wicket taker. He's got his runs as well. I'm trying to wrap my brains here. There are guys who've not necessarily got the reward, enough. I think have
you
been.
You've answered.
We'll go with that. Can I declare that?
Yeah, you can stop. That's more than enough. Okay, let's get to the county preview.
Match of the week.
Okay, so 8 games this week. Gloucestershire against Somerset, Kent versus Surrey, Warwickshire, Northampton, Yorkshire, Lancashire. Yorkshire have been in a good position a couple of games now, haven't they? I'll pick you out, George. They just haven't been able to see it home. I think they picked up an injury in the game before last. Otherwise, they fancied their chances. I think that was against Kent. And again this week, didn't they? They just fell short again. They just couldn't force home the victory. But Yorkshire, Lancashire, that's always a game of the week, wouldn't you say?
I would. And I think it's a really attractive game for lots of reasons. I do think Lancashire look pretty ominously strong right now. So that's a proper test for Yorkshire. That Yorkshire batting lineup is as you say, it's formidable. But they're struggling to bowl teams out. Maybe. You know, it's a new test for Kabir Ali, the new bowling coach there, isn't it? See if they can find a way through sides. And you know, I know we counted him out earlier, but, Don Best, you can see a way he gets back in because he can bat and he's terrific in the field. So it is impossible that they, you know, Don Best has a good game here and he forced himself into contention for that all-rounder who can help balance the side at 8. It's absolutely possible. But yeah, that's actually a really mouth-watering game.
Absolutely. Division 2, Middlesex against Notts. That's a big game. Leicestershire against Sussex. Durham, Glamorgan. If Durham don't get something out of that, then a gap's going to start inching out between or spreading out between Durham and the top 2 and 3. And Derbyshire, who didn't play this weekend, last weekend, against Worcestershire. What are your thoughts there, Harmy?
Yeah, Durham need to beat Gloucestershire. I would imagine there'll be a little bit more life in the surface at the Riverside because they're not at the bat on it, and they've got some serious artillery when it comes to the batting. They need to be able to get 20 wickets, and they've got to try and find somehow how to beat Glamorgan, because you're right, I think if that goes down towards Wales, then I think then the promotion struggle will be on from Durham's point of view. Broad bowling at Lords. George has questioned whether Broad plays in the first test match. Well, he's going to bowl at Lords against Sam Robson, Mark Stoneman, Hanscom, batting unit, which is on a bit of form. So the likes of Patterson White, Dane Patterson, as well as Stuart Broad, Luke Fletcher, that's not a bad attack going against Middlesex up on the top. But I can't wait for that Yorkshire-Lancashire game. I think that'll be a fantastic game of cricket. Anderson against Root, top players throughout both sides. That should be. I'd like to have thought that might have been on TV, because that'll be a high quality match. And if the pitch is to suit, I think it'll be a good game.
Brilliant stuff. Well, at 8 game. Where's everyone going to be, by the way? Nick, where are you going to be? What 5 games are you going to drop in and see?
I'm going to split my time between Gloucester, Somerset, and Middlesex, Notts. Although I'm tempted by Beckenham, because if you think you've seen good batting tracks yet, just wait until Beckenham opens up for its first championship game of the season. I think if you polled all the county batters, you'd get more guys saying Beckenham was the favourite place to bat than anywhere else. And Nathan Gilchrist, what a place to break his run on noughts.
I'll be there.
Are you there?
Yeah. Well, it's just down the road from me. What about you, Harmy? Where are you going to be?
I'll be at Embleton on Saturday with the Mighty Battle Team. I actually had a play last Thursday night. And I'm still recovering from it now. I feel it for 20 overs, but Ash in the second team. And then he asked me, politely inquired if I could field for 50 overs on the Saturday. And the answer was a very firm and well thought about, no, I'm not interested in fielding for 50 overs. I'm still struggling from Thursday.
What about you, George?
Well, Leeds is probably the most attractive, isn't it? And it would be nice, wouldn't it, if KP cut up some footage of Saqib and Anderson v Root and Milan and said, actually, do you know what? This county cricket is pretty damn good, isn't it?
Yeah, and in fairness to KP, he did tweet out a picture of or a footage of Shaheen Afridi bowling to Pujara, I think. Yeah, so credit where credit's due. Okay,
I say again, his criticisms come from a good place. I honestly believe they do. He has always pushed the game forward. I just think he's wrong.
Yeah. He's always seen it his way and tried to do it his way as well. So fair dues to him. And also been proven right quite a lot.
Yeah.
Let's go to One to Watch.
One to Watch.
Okay, One to Watch. My man didn't play again. Not the Derbyshire play, so Dustin Melson's out. You missed Mason Crane last week, George. We filled in for you. He took a couple of wickets in both innings. He, of course, has moved to Sussex on a month loan. 1 for 75 and 0 for 81. A little bit of a painful second innings, but at least he's getting a little bit of... It wasn't great.
Well, that's all right. He's playing. That's the important thing. Happens. He's the barometer of English cricket in a way, because if he's playing, the pitches must be conducive to that sort of bowling. So that's encouraging, if nothing else.
Ed Pollock, Nick, 32-10 against Durham.
Yeah, continuing to go, still going to run a ball. No big scores this week. A big honour for Jack Haynes, though. First time of many, I suspect. I think Chris Rushworth tweeted similarly afterwards, having bowled against him for 90 overs. He was at his first List A 100 last year. He's an excellent young cricketer. And I hope that first one sort of opens the floodgates.
And Matt Potts, you mentioned him. I mean, he's been your one to watch since the start of the campaign. And 6 for 62 in first innings, 0 for 85 in second.
Yeah, he bowled well again. Watching some of the footage, he's challenging batsmen on the outside edge, on the inside edge, on off stump. Not really sure how quick pace wise he is. I think he's around about mid 80s. I don't think he's the express that you've got. Category of Stone and Wood and Archer, but he's quick enough. And with everybody, the injuries that are going, if England pick 14 men squad for Lords, he might have an outside chance of being that 14th man to soak up what's happening, because England might think they need, if they need a quick bowler, other than, and I missed him out earlier, Jamie Overton, they're probably the two quickest in the country at the minute, and he's definitely performing, which is good. Good for Durham as well.
Absolutely. Well, look, Nick, George, Harmy, thanks for your time. We'll all be back this time next week. Hope you've enjoyed the show, whether you're listening on podcasts or the radio or on YouTube, over on Harmy's YouTube channel or the Cricketer magazines. This is Following On, County Cricketer, bringing you all of the reaction and reflection to the county game. And we'll be back with you same time next week. Well, that's it for another edition of Following On. Thanks for listening. And if you ever have any ideas for guests or have questions for the likes of Steve Harmison or Neil Manthorpe, feel free to tweet me at Fulham John or via at @cricket_TS. And either I or one of the team will make sure that your questions are read out on the show at the earliest convenience. Also, please take the time to leave a review. And if you're already a subscriber, then tell your mates to do the same. And if you want more content from the likes of Steve Harmison, then head over to his YouTube channel and tell him I sent you. Thanks for listening to Following On.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.